Welcome to the Catholic Cafe, where Catholic truth is served fresh daily. We've made you a reservation in the luxurious corner booth, so come on in and see what's on the menu today. Now, here's your host, Deacon Jeff Drzemski.
Greetings and welcome to the Catholic Cafe. I'm Deacon Jeff, sitting in the luxurious corner booth of the Catholic Cafe. I've got Ziggy Rodriguez here.
That's me.
Along with Venerable Tom Dorian.
Yes, sir.
We have a unique thing to do today we've never done before. Mm-hmm. We are putting on our media hats, and we have reviewed a film.
I thought we've done that before.
I don't know that we ever
did. We did Cabrini, but we also kind of talked about like the pushback on Cabrini that some people had.
And yeah, it wasn't so much like before a release or something like that. And although this film, the film we're reviewing and talking about today is Triumph of the Heart, that Angelo D'Ambrosio created, wrote, and directed. And we're going to cut to the end. It's fantastic.
Yes.
It's fantastic.
Thumbs
and you got to go see it. Thumbs up. You know, three thumbs up, you know, six thumbs up.
Whatever.
Exactly. There's three of us sitting here. You know, so, but I think we want to talk about it. But what's happening is it's actually getting ready to be released for streaming.
Yes. Yes. On November 3rd, on All Souls Day, it'll be released for, or no, yeah, is that November 2nd?
2nd.
Yeah. It would
All
Souls Day. Yeah.
Yeah. Awesome. And I think, it's through EWTN and some other partners, and it's an awesome movie, and so we thought we would talk about that movie, mm-hmm. you know, because it did come out in the theaters. You guys saw it in the theater.
We did,
yes, and then I got one of those little screener links,
yes.
you know, the unique opportunity to be able to see it. Because I wasn't able to get to the theater because it had a little short run in our little town here. Didn't play it very long, but I'm glad you guys got to see it in the theater experience. I mm-hmm. prefer that, but this was a great. But this one I was able to, like, in a unique way, I was able to watch this film with a pad of paper in front of me because I don't typically do that.
Mm-hmm.
But I knew we'd be talking about it, so I was able to write a whole bunch of stuff down. Now most of it I'm not going to reveal because I really want you to see this movie.
Mm-hmm.
But I was amazed. We should probably talk about the premise of the movie to a certain degree because it's
sure.
everyone knows a little bit about Saint Maximilian Kolbe and the fact that he basically stepped in for someone else, another German prisoner, you know, and he's or a prisoner of the Germans, and he steps in for a man who's got a family and takes his place, basically giving his life, and
mm-hmm.
and we all kind of know that basic story. But this takes place, this film takes place after that, after he's done that.
Right.
And so you start to see that unfold and that play out. And, you know, Sam, you know some of the history of where this came from. Tell us a little bit about, what this work was based on and help us understand. Because we don't necessarily have all the details, and we have to fill some stuff in here.
Okay, so I want to share with you all a line from Virgil, which is that the greatest form of art is the concealment of it. And what he means is that, you know, if you see a work of art where the artistry is very obvious and very overt, right, and you can tell what came specifically from the artist, that... there's a loss of art in that, but if you are able to just behold a work and the artistry of it is concealed, that is sort of a very high art, right? So why do I say that? Well, in this film, you know, it's a historical drama on one hand, and a lot of times when you see a historical drama or a biopic, you sit there wondering, okay, but how much of this is like historically accurate? How well researched was this? Things like that.
Do we know this actually happened this way?
Yeah, did it happen exactly this way? These are questions that we often ask ourselves, and it can get in the way of what's called suspension of disbelief during a normal historical drama, right, or a biopic. And suspension of disbelief, what that means is you're able to just let go and... forget the fact that what you're watching is a movie and you're able to just immerse yourself in that film, right? And so in this film, It's funny. It's interesting. This is probably the first time I've ever seen like a work of historical drama or a biopic where suspension of disbelief was so masterfully accomplished that I did not care what was sort of true with a lowercase t, you know, in terms of historical accuracy, because what I cared about ultimately was all of it is true with a capital T. The truth that shines through this film, the Catholic truth, the human truth, so much shines through it. And I think there was a great courage on behalf of the director, Anthony D'Ambrosio, to choose to focus in on, because there are other aspects of St. Maximilian Kolbe's life that are pretty well documented, right?
Yeah. And there's some flashbacks in this movie that kind of help tell some of that story.
Right. I mean,
but that's not the focus.
I mean, he was a public figure. He published a lot. Including a lot of political commentary that got him in trouble, but it's possible that St. Maximilian Kolbe could have been canonized just for the great work that he did and sharing the truth. But ultimately, most people would say that what it's at the heart of St. Maximilian Kolbe's canonization was that decision to step in for that man, right, and to offer his life. Because that prefigures, you know, that points us to Christ. Christ lays down his life for us, right? I mean, there's just such an amazing Christian witness for what St. Maximilian Kolbe did. And so the focus was there. And we all know, a lot of us know St. Maximilian Kolbe. He and, you know, was it nine others, were starved to death in a bunker over a period of, was it 9, 10 days?
I think it was 2 weeks.
Yeah, something like that. I forgot the exact number of days, but...
Well, it went up to day 14 on the little screen.
Okay, went to day 14 on the screen. Yeah, I'd lost track because we keep going.
I know you get drawn into this.
You get drawn into it. Yeah, exactly. And so what he's chosen to do, what Anthony chose to do, was to bring St. Maximilian Kolbe into this space with characters that, you know, regardless of whether or not they are historically accurate characters, it just doesn't matter because it was so masterfully done that the truth of what St. Max Kolbe, what his life and his martyrdom means to us, what his life means to us, what the Catholic faith teaches us through him, all of it was just so powerfully, beautifully there.
Yeah, I agree with that 100%. And I think I know also the title of the film, you know, Triumph of the Heart, and where you're talking about Virgil, you know, Tom, you know this was based on, right? We talked a little bit about the fact this was based on that title is really sort of the antithesis or the opposite of Triumph of the Will.
It fits in perfectly with Virgil's comment about the perfect compliment to art is concealing it.
Yeah.
If you think about the title, Triumph of the Heart, it's so subtle compared to Triumph of the Will.
Yes.
Right. Lenny Riefenstahl's famous movie from World War II, you know, exalting the Nazis and the Third Reich and all that stuff and how horrible all that was and how blatantly obvious.
Yeah.
Right. So it wasn't art. It was because I actually had to watch that movie in college when I was going through film school. Mm-hmm. And when I watched that movie, they always talked about what a brilliant filmmaker she was and all these the imagery and how she did all these
cutting
things.
Edge.
Maybe there is. It's unfortunate that someone would use their gifts and their talents in such a terrible way. But the thing is, as far as like Virgil goes, he would have said nasty words about Triumph of the Will because that wasn't. It was just obvious. It was a.
Right.
It was a proclamation. It was a statement. It was not artistic, mm-hmm. in the sense that it didn't cause you. It didn't cause you to ponder, mm-hmm. right? To search and to experience truth versus to be motivated to do something, mm-hmm. Which was in World War II days really bad. Right. You know what people were motivated to do. When they watch Triumph of the Will, and how Triumph of the Heart is like, it's the literal opposite.
Complete.
Well, and that also.
And yet more powerful.
Well, yeah. Triumph, Triumph, totally. Triumph of the Will got its name, you know, in part as it's a very Nietzschean concept, right? And Nietzsche, most famous for saying God is dead, right? And the Nietzschean philosophy, which was very central to basically Nazi philosophy, was that you have to get past these old ideas, these old religious ideas. You have to get past the feelings that keep you trapped to these ideas of what's moral and what's immoral. And it's the Übermensch, the strong man, is going to be the Superman is the one who's going to be able to exercise his will to break through all of that, right? And that's presented as freedom. And the Nazis really rallied around ideas that, within that framework.
Yeah,
but also even I hate to interrupt, but also even one of the characters was wrestling with that while they were captured, were they not? When they were being starved, did I miss that?
No, but I think it was even further pronounced because we saw that represented in. The character of Carl Fritsch, who's the commandant, when he's teaching his son to box, remember his son's like kind of he's wearing him out, and he says strength is a choice, right? Mm-hmm. And so in his vision and his understanding of that is kind of like Triumph of the Will. You choose to be strong, and therefore you are strong. Whereas that is presented as the opposite of actual strength, which is what Saint Maximilian Kolbe was displaying, and his choice was to follow God. His choice was to allow God to be his strength, right? And so it actually made him stronger than Carl Fritsch could ever imagine. And Carl Fritsch never understood what actual strength was.
Mm-hmm. And he goes later in the film, he's coming out saying like, we're going to win. Don't you see that you're going to lose and that there's no victory for you or
that's
whatever
right.
it might be.
Yep.
And by the way, I just want to say, since we brought up that character, something very chilling about that character, the way that it was presented, I'm reminded of there was a documentary that was done in the 90s called Human Remains, and all it was it took people like Hitler, Stalin, Mao Zedong, people who were associated with, you know, like mass genocide, and it basically just showed like their home movies of and like mundane aspects of their everyday life, and it's called Human Remains because in a way their soul, of course, was dead, but the human remains what leaves you open. And it's very chilling watching that because you're seeing like Hitler having a very nice time with friends at his home
Eagle's
and
nest.
Stuff like that, right? The Eagle's Nest. And in this instance, I think by the vast majority of when we see this character Fritz presented, it's within that sort of domestic setting. Yeah. And what you see is because that's more chilling because it's not like we're presenting all the Nazis as just these demons who don't have, any sort of humanity or moral compass. And instead you see, I mean, there's certain things that poke through where the wife basically definitely takes on sort of a Lady Macbeth character, and saying, you got to go ahead and finish off this friar. And there's other things that poke through in terms of how he, there's different things that happen where the Nazi identity sort of pokes through, and you pointed to one of those with the strength as a choice thing.
Yeah.
But it's very chilling the way that a lot of the time that you see Fritz, he's a family man.
Well, I know, but I think what's brilliantly done in this film, though, is, and I've seen other portrayals in this form and fashion where they will juxtapose the horrors that they're inflicting upon the Jewish people and the Catholic people or anybody of faith, Polish leaders or whatever in these concentration camps, death camps, and then them having like living there on the campus and the kids playing in the yard, and there's a lot of that, and this little kid playing the piano, and there's this tense moment where all of a sudden the kid who's playing on the piano, I guess he's maybe 13, 14, 15, something like that, starts playing some kind of either Polish anthem or a Jewish hymn or something that he heard the people singing.
Yes.
And the dad goes, Carl Fritsch goes like nuts.
Right.
Where did
that?
You learn this? Right.
Mm-hmm.
And
right.
it infiltrates and rocks his family. And it's one of those moments where, you watch the juxtaposition and you actually as a viewer sit there and go like, and I even said it when I was talking a little bit to Bess. Hi, Bess. When I was talking to her about this, I actually, she said, like, I don't understand how people can be so evil. right? And you see this juxtaposed in this film where he's having this little happy family life, and he's reading his newspaper, and they're having their dinner. Let's have our dinner outside. You know, and it's like this, whatever. And then in the background, you see, like, the smokestack going. It's a horrible thing that's happening. That's right. And then you start to realize that they just basically fooled themselves into thinking. They just convinced themselves this, and but you as the viewer go, like, they don't get it. They how can they not have gotten it? And what's so powerful, I think, that long little diatribe I just did really is to focus on this next point that I wanted to bring up, and that is that this has contemporary meaning. This movie has contemporary meaning. There's a quote in there that really stuck out to me. One of his cellmates, Albert, and we see a little bit of his story told in some of the recap stuff in the movie. But Albert actually says these words when he's talking to Colby. So Colby is sitting there talking about hope, right? Colby is talking about it's going to be okay or whatever, you know. And Albert is getting frustrated and a little angry, a little short with Colby because he says, Albert says, "I wonder where have you been these past 2 years to believe in heaven or God? Certainly, you couldn't have been living in this world." Mm-hmm. And then he goes on and lists all these horrible things that are going on in the world, right? And as he's listening to those things, I'm going, oh my goodness, these are all the things that are happening right now.
Right.
So we're 70 years later, 80 years later, and the same things are still happening. So it's a modern message. And so why we need to pay attention to films like this is because we, as creatures of habit, we fall back into bad ways. We fall back when we erase history, when we ignore history and the reasons for the way things, we don't learn from history, we're doomed to repeat it, right? And it's like, and it's a terrible thing, but you wonder, when we're rewriting history now, we're going to end up doing horrible things to people if we don't pay attention to what's going on and we don't use these as moments of reflection to be able to realize we're not going back there again. We're not doing that again. Because we could say that same thing that Albert said. You know, where have you been these last couple of years? Have you not seen what the world's going on around us, how terrible it is? I mean, I know for a fact I've said that in a homily. I didn't know I was quoting Albert from Triumph of the Heart, because it's like people go like, yeah, things are bad out there. You know, right. How can you have hope? You know, and that's why we have to pay attention to this film, because you know, St. Maximilian Kolbe gives us reason for this hope. That's why I think this is a beautiful portrayal, artistic vision of what would have happened in that cell. And I know they know some things that happened in the cell, because there's people that went in and out to, like, either clean up the mess or clean up the dead bodies, the people that would die over the period of time. And then also people could hear the singing and things like that were happening in the cell. Mm-hmm. And these are like signs of hope. In the middle of a death camp, mm-hmm. you know, there's these sounds of voices of men that are going to die.
Yes.
They know they're going to die, and yet they're singing religious hymns. Mm-hmm. How beautiful that was to me. Those are some of the most moving parts, I think, in this movie.
Well, I think also the film just is rich with Catholic teaching generally. It really teaches us about, like, how God through the cross accompanies us in our suffering, and we are likewise called to accompany others in their suffering. And what you see, what ends up shining through, and I think this is also a very important message for today, is it shows just this the beauty of authentic masculinity, because there's a Christian masculinity that really shines through in this film. You know, Matt Frad has a saying that he says about masculinity is strength on behalf of others, mm-hmm. right? And here we have these men, they're huddled together in this bunker. They're not afraid to hold each other. You know, they're not afraid to, it's just a very beautiful vulnerability that shines through between them that shines alongside a masculinity, a deep masculinity born of strength, and it's a strength that comes from ultimately Maximilian Kolbe's trust in God, his hope being in God, and his belief that love is ultimately the thing that triumphs, and that the we have that there's a discussion between Freech and him, where Freech is claiming that strength is basically the thing that is the measure of nature, that is the thing that moves nature, and he says no, the thing that nature responds to is love.
Yeah,
and it's just such a,
and that's the strength, and
that's the
source of all that strength, and that's awesome. And I love that you brought up the communal aspect of this, the fact that they. Because there's several places in the movie that I thought were just really powerful. I don't want to give all these powerful moments away, but there is a time where, like just a couple of days into this, when you don't take in food, your body doesn't have any carbohydrates to burn, or there's nothing left to burn, and so you start to freeze to death. Even if it's not freezing cold outside, you basically are there. So they're all shivering, and then one of the folks says, if we're going to survive, we must gather together, mm-hmm. right? And then Kolbe actually calls them together around him. Mm-hmm. And so they huddle together. And just what you were talking about, there's some very strong Catholic themes. The idea that people that were in dire straits gathered together around the priest,
mm-hmm.
right? And they basically sleep through the night that way, mm-hmm. And there's no insinuation that there's anything other than people living as human beings that gather together and find strength in their community, but also that strength is through the priest.
Mm-hmm. Yes,
right. And then there's another scene a little bit later where they're together, and they there's all these struggles that people are encountering that you can imagine, mm-hmm. and Albert is having a difficult time of it. Of just coming on board with this idea of that there is a God, right? And so, he gets encouraged by Kolbe, where Kolbe says to him, "Finish the race." And it's amazing how then everybody comes together, and they all encourage him together as a group. And then there's also this sort of group confession thing that happens.
Mm-hmm.
It's like these powerful moments where you start to see the power and the beauty. That we were communal beings that were created by God to be communal beings, that we would find the strength of God in that community.
Yes.
And in the priesthood. And so if you ever stopped and thought that, like, oh, we don't need priests, we don't need church, we don't need these things, you realize, no. In our most dire moments, that's exactly what we need. Mm-hmm. And that's where we find our basic creature comforts are found in community with each other, not in isolation.
And really, the thing that is I love the most about the film is that it's a great work of art. And frankly, we've all seen a lot of Christian films that are cheesy, they're formulaic, they're really just trying to get some butts in the seat, so to speak, to sell tickets. And, and sometimes they will, have effect on people's lives. And so I don't want to diminish the capacity for anything... for God to use anything, but I think this is a work of art, and we really, as a church, we need a new renaissance. We need serious Catholic artists to step up and communicate the faith through the truth of the faith through beauty, right? Like Robert Barron says, in the beauty they see goodness, in the goodness they see truth. I think that's accomplished so perfectly here, and I really hope that it inspires other film. I'm myself have aspirations filmmaking wise and screenwriting wise, and it was a deep source of inspiration for me to be able to see this execution. And I also want to say that you don't have to be Catholic to appreciate this. I mean, think it's going to speak to a Catholic soul, but I think if it really gets out there to general audiences, I think it's going to move people regardless of whether they even believe in God.
I mean, and amazingly, there's the interplay between the Jews in the cell and Kolbe. The interchange, and it shows you the closeness between the Jewish people and the Catholic people. And it's very, very beautiful in that, and how there's some issues there that are just so beautiful how they're laid out and played out that I think will be very well received in our modern culture, where we have a problem with anti-Semitism, we have a problem with all the current goings on in politics, but this is very, very unifying And have on this unified goal of eternal salvation, how powerful that is.
Hey, before you get to your next point, I've got to say this. If I don't, I'll never live this down. And
please,
I'm giving you time to finish, too. My grandson is named after him. He's named Colbe.
Oh, really?
Yeah, got to say that.
If oh, that's awesome.
If I don't say that, you know I'm right. I will never live that down.
No,
so
you good thing
he goes by Colby, but hey, Colby,
absolutely.
How you doing, man?
Absolutely. I didn't really have much more to say other than there were a couple of the images that still stick with me. Like one of them was just the director's choice to, even in the very, very, like we're talking about the sunset of their lives. Literally, we're almost 2 weeks into being starved to death, and there are these images of this serpent crawling all over these bodies.
Mm-hmm.
And it just tells you the harrowing truth of that Satan will not give up until you've taken your last breath.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. There's a lot of surrealist that, you know, because it's a great work of art, you know, and I love how they blend both the madness and the mysticism into the reality of the moment quite powerfully.
Yeah, and the other powerful thing about this thing, it's another one of those great films for me. Like, I remember, like, Henry Fonda and the 12 Angry Men and things, mm-hmm. like that, where you start to see yourself as one of the characters.
Mm-hmm.
This is the same thing in this movie. You see all of these different characters that are played out here, and you start to see yourself in some of these or multiple of these characters.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes it's like, I don't want to be that. Mm-hmm. I don't want to be that. But it's like, but the overarching theme of this whole thing is hope. And you come away with a really, really strong sense of hope the way it's powerfully presented here.
Yeah, the ending, we don't want to spoil it.
We're not
going to
spoil it,
wow.
But it's just amazing. And you think, like, because usually you see these historical dramas about Nazis and World War II, and you get depressed. How can people treat people like this? And then you start to see the theme, the Catholic theme specifically, of redemptive suffering, and you start to realize just how powerful all this is, and how God can take something so horrendous and so evil and allow good to come from it. And then we have a saint's life that we can emulate. The Christ figure in this movie is Saint Maximilian Kolbe, for obvious reasons. But we can start to see ourselves as Kolbe sometimes, and how mm-hmm. powerful that is. So go see Triumph of the Heart. Well done. Great movie. And I think you'll be moved by this. And I think the world needs to be moved. Hail Mary, full of grace, the Lord is with thee. Blessed art thou among women, and blessed is the fruit of thy womb, Jesus.
Holy Mary, Mother of God, pray for us sinners, now and at the hour of our death. Amen.
Thanks for listening to The Catholic Cafe. If you'd like to contact Deacon Jeff, send him an email at deaconjeff@thecatholiccafe.com. Visit us on the web at thecatholiccafe.com. You can also find us on iTunes, or follow us on Facebook and Twitter. The Catholic Cafe is brought to you by the Order of Malta Federal Association. Join us again at the Catholic Cafe, serving up salvation one cup of coffee at a time.